soft life became a promise before it became a trend. A quiet home, a safe body, a life without constant strain. The idea spread fast through screams and conversations, offered as a cure for exhaustion and a path to rest. But behind the glow sat a truth that rarely naded into the talk. Softness costs money. Softness needs time. Softness depends on someone else doing the labor you no longer want to carry. The pressure met women already running on empty. They worked two shifts, one for pay and one for survival. They held families together. They pushed through rising costs, stagnant wages, and partners who leaned on their strength while offering little relief. Soft life asked them to let go. Their reality refused to give permission. The story begins at that tension point. The dream on one side, the weight of the world on the other. Soft life rising as a symbol. Hard life refusing to move. Chapter 1. The promise of ease. Soft life rose fast. The phrase moved from small corners of conversation to every surface of public talk. It carried the image of quiet mornings, steady pay, safe homes, and a body free from strain. It promised a life where nothing pressed too hard and no one demanded too much. The message hit at a moment when women across cities felt worn thin. They listened because they were tired, and they shared it because they hoped it was possible. The early adopters became unofficial guides. They posted scenes of comfort and slow days. They said rest was a right, not a treat. They said softness was a choice. Their voices shaped the tone. Their confidence made the idea look reachable. They held the center of the conversation, and people treated their words as a map. The map hid more than it showed. Behind the calm scenes sat a foundation built on income, support, and networks. The images of ease looked simple. The reality behind it was not. Soft life demanded steady money that covered more than the basics. It required time that could be freed from labor. It needed safety that did not collapse every time a bill arrived. It depended on someone else holding the pieces of daily life that the woman no longer wanted to carry. The conversation rarely pointed to that structure. Public talk framed soft life as a mindset. A woman only had to set her boundaries, walk away from stress, and refuse anything that chipped at her peace. The message sounded clean. It ignored the weight of survival. It did not mention rising rent in Kingston or Chicago. It did not mention long commutes, split shifts, or unpredictable work schedules. It did not mention the cost of childcare or the pressure of caring for elders. It stayed focused on the surface, not the engine. The gap between promise and reality widened fast. Women with steady salaries could step toward softness. They outsourced chores. They bought back their time through convenience. They hired help or relied on quiet networks that had always cushioned their lives. They could step away from chaos because someone else handled the fallout. Working women faced a different world. They held jobs that drained their bodies. They balanced bills that never stopped rising. They managed homes without consistent support. They carried children alone or shared duties with partners who expected them to handle the heaviest parts. They moved through days shaped by pressure. They did not have time to choose softness. They had to make it through. Soft life asked for stillness. Their lives demanded motion. They wanted rest, but the cost of slowing down was high. Falling behind meant losing ground they could not afford to replace. The price of pause was too steep. Their loyalty stayed with survival, not aspiration. Public talk did not slow. The pressure grew. Soft life became a standard. Women who could not reach it felt behind. They questioned their choices. They blame themselves for not creating peace. The trend that promised freedom began to create a new kind of strain. The demand to be soft sat on shoulders already bent from tarrying too much. Some tried anyway. They attempted small steps. They cut off stressful contacts. They insisted on quiet time. They reduced social obligations. These shifts helped for a moment. But the world pushed back. A missed shift erased income. A sick child ended any chance of rest. An overdue bill forced them back into long days. Their attempts at softness collided with the structure around them. The structure had been built long before the trend. It shaped who could reach ease and who remained locked in survival. It shaped which women were celebrated for stepping into calm and which women were labeled irresponsible for wanting the same thing. It created a divide that the trend did not address. The divide sat on class lines, racial lines, and generational lines. It was old and wide. Women across different cities felt the same pressure. In Kingston, the cost of living squeezed single mothers who worked two jobs. In Chicago, service workers dealt with unstable schedules that shifted from week to week. In both places, women balanced labor and care. Their days opened early and closed late. Their strength was treated as ordinary. Their exhaustion was treated as expected. Soft life entered this environment like a whisper from a world far away. It showed what could exist in a life free from pressure. It also revealed how far many women were from that world. The idea became a mirror. It showed their own fatigue and how long they had been carrying it. It showed the limits placed on them. It showed the gap between the promise of ease and the economy that stood in their way. Some women rejected the trend. Not because they disliked rest, but because the message felt dishonest. They said the idea only worked for those who already had help. They said the conversation ignored the lives of women who fought through daily strain. They said the trend erased the truth that softness takes resources. They said it was a dream built on a foundation they had never been allowed to stand on. The divide sharpened. Women who embraced soft life insisted the movement was about reclaiming dignity. They said every woman deserved ease. They said the mindset mattered more than circumstances. They argued that softness was a form of resistance to a world that demanded their labor without care. Women on the other side asked a different question. They wanted to know how a mindset could override exhaustion created by conditions outside their control. They wanted to know how a woman could rest when rest cost money she did not have. They wanted to know why the conversation placed responsibility on individual women instead of the systems that shaped their days. Both sides claimed truth. Both sides argued from lived experience. The trend did not settle the debate. It exposed it. The early adopters continued to promote the idea. Their voices stayed loud. Their lives remained framed as proof that softness was attainable. They did not deny the role of privilege, but many treated it as an afterthought. They believed every woman could adjust her life toward ease if she made the right choices. Their belief ignored the walls that many women faced every day. Those walls were not new. They were built from work expectations, domestic responsibilities, community demands, and financial instability. They held women in place. They limited how far a woman could move toward calm. They shaped her options long before she tried to change them. The promise of soft life clashed with these walls. The clash revealed a truth that sat at the center of the story. Softness requires stability. Stability depends on resources. Resources depend on opportunity. Opportunity is not evenly spread. This chapter closes at the point where the tension becomes unavoidable. Soft life rises as a symbol of ease. The women who need ease the most stand furthest from it. The question sits heavy. What does softness mean when the basic conditions for safety and rest do not exist. Chapter 2. The Weight That Never Lifted. Soft life looked simple when viewed from the outside. The surface showed clean spaces, slow days, and unhurried choices. Beneath that surface sat a history that shaped who could reach it. Many women carried strain that began long before adulthood. They inherited a way of living built on survival. Rest was never presented as an option. Strength was taught early and enforced daily. In many homes, daughters learned to work before they learned to dream. They grew up watching women move through long days without pause. These women held families together through discipline, sacrifice, and resilience. They did not speak about ease. They spoke about duty. They trained the next generation to endure. Soft life asked those daughters to reverse what had kept their families alive. The shift felt impossible. Economic pressure deepened the divide. Wages stagnated. Costs climbed. Jobs in the service sector became less predictable. Hours shifted. Benefits shrank. And expectations grew. Women carried the heaviest impact because they filled many of these roles. They supported households on paychecks that stretched thin. They lived with the fear that one missed day could collapse their stability. The request to choose softness did not match the reality they faced. Housing added another layer of strain. Rent increased faster than income. In Kingston, the price of modest apartments pushed families into crowded spaces. In Chicago, entire neighborhoods faced rising costs that forced long relocations. The search for affordable housing consumed time and energy. Stability depended on income, transportation, and safety. Soft life needed a foundation that many women could not build. Food costs rose. Utility costs rose. Transportation costs rose. Women managed these shifts with precision. They balanced budgets that left no room for error. They cut back on everything except what kept their households functional. The idea of spending money on rest, convenience, or comfort felt distant. Their attention stayed locked on survival. The pressure expanded inside relationships as well. Emotional labor shaped every corner of their lives. Women held the responsibility for maintaining peace, anticipating needs, resolving conflict, and managing schedules. They listened, supported, and advised. They absorbed stress from partners and families. They did this while carrying their own burdens. Their labor remained invisible and unpaid. Soft life framed boundaries as a solution. Women who already felt stretched then struggled to set limits. They feared being labeled uncooperative. They feared losing relationships. They feared backlash from partners who relied heavily on their emotional work. Their attempts at boundaries often led to conflict. The promise of ease became another point of pressure. Family expectations created another barrier. Older relatives leaned on younger women for care. They expected assistance with transportation, errands, and appointments. They expected presence at family events, even when schedules were tight. They expected help with children in the household. The load was constant. Soft life required distance from these duties. Distance was not always possible. Generational strain built a cycle. Women who work through exhaustion raise daughters who watch them. These daughters learned that rest was earned only after everything else was handled. They learned that a strong woman keeps moving. They learned that silence about fatigue was part of maturity. Soft life demanded they unlearn what had shaped their identity. It asked them to define strength differently. It asked them to loosen their grip on roles that their families depended on. The labor market reinforced the pressure. Employers rewarded availability, not balance. Women who requested schedule adjustments risked losing hours. Women who needed time off risked losing jobs. requests for flexibility were treated as a lack of dedication. The system punished anyone who tried to create space for themselves. Soft life required room to breathe. The workplace offered none. The midpoint turned sad in this collision. Softness stopped looking like a lifestyle. It became a reminder of what they could not reach. Each time a woman tried to claim rest, something pulled her back. A sick child, an unexpected bill, a shift change, a family demand, a partner's emotional crisis. These moments stacked, and the distance between aspiration and reality hardened. Some women blame themselves. They believe they had failed to manage their time, boundaries, or money correctly. They absorbed guilt. They questioned their worth. They wondered why other women seemed able to live softly while they faced constant pressure. They internalized the idea that softness was a personal achievement instead of a structural privilege. Other women recognized the pattern. They saw how privilege shaped access to ease. They saw how race, class, and geography determined who received support. They watched women with lighter workloads, higher pay, or inherited networks step easily into soft life. They noticed how the movement emphasized mindset while avoiding discussions of inequality. They understood that softness had prerequisites that were not evenly provided. The emotional toll grew. Women moved through days feeling behind. They felt punished for wanting things that others treated as normal. They felt isolated inside their fatigue. They felt unseen by a culture that praised rest but offered little to make it real. They felt pressured by messages that implied they were choosing hardship by not embracing softness. Partners added to the tension. Many relied heavily on women's emotional and logistical labor. They expected women to manage the household while also maintaining emotional strength. They viewed soft life as a luxury that disrupted routine. They resisted changes that forced them to take on more work. Women faced backlash when they attempted to shift responsibilities. The household depended on their labor. Softness threatened the balance. Communities held expectations too. Churches, schools, neighborhood groups often looked to women for leadership and volunteer work. Women carried these duties because they were raised to fill the gaps left by underfunded systems. They kept their communities functioning. Soft life required stepping back from these roles, but stepping back meant leaving needs unmet. Women felt guilt at the thought of withdrawal. Across these settings, one truth held steady. The world treated women as the ones who must absorb every impact. Their resilience became a resource for others. Their strength became a requirement. Their exhaustion became normalized. Soft life asked them to release that burden. The world around them refused to cooperate. The concept of choice collapsed under this pressure. The trend framed softness as a personal decision. Women who lived on the edge knew the truth. Choices shaped by survival were not free choices. Every decision carried consequences. Their margin for error was thin. Their attempts to choose softness risked their stability. The movement did not address that risk. By the midpoint, the divide became clear. Some women accessed ease through resources, networks, and inherited support. Others fought to keep their homes intact. Some embraced slow living because they could afford it. Others worked extended hours because they had no alternative. The trend flattened these differences. It treated them as equal starting points. They were not. This chapter closes as the central question sharpens. Who carries the cost when softness is treated as a personal choice rather than a structural privilege? The answer is heavy and visible. The load falls on the women who already carry the most. Chapter 3. The privilege line. Soft life reached the height of its visibility, just as the divide around it became impossible to ignore. The trend claimed universality. The reality behind it was selective. Access depended on structures that existed long before the first conversation about ease. These structures governed who could rest without risk, who could outsource labor, who could build stability, and who could step back from pressure without watching life collapse. Soft life did not create privilege. It revealed it. The foundation started with class. Women with higher incomes gained entry into softness through direct purchase. They paid for convenience, domestic help, childcare, food delivery, ride services, and wellness routines. Their time was protected because their money could absorb the tasks that consumed hours in most households. Their stability came from salaries that handled emergencies without knocking them down. Their rest came from choosing when to stop. These choices had been available to them long before the term soft life appeared. Below that tier sat women who lived with limited room for error. Their earnings covered essentials, but not much more. Any attempt to buy convenience cut into savings they needed for protection. They balanced responsibilities with little backup. Their rest came in small pieces, usually during moments when everything was temporarily under control. Soft life asked for more than temporary relief. It required a full reordering of life. They did not have the resources to fund that shift. The biggest divide appeared among women living under constant pressure. They managed homes without support, earned wages that could not stretch, and navigated environments where safety and stability were fragile. They protected their families by grinding through long days. Their rest depended on conditions they could not control. Soft life placed them at the edge of a world they could see but never enter. The trend held a mirror to their exhaustion and offered no structural path forward. Colorism shaped access as well. In both Caribbean and American contexts, lighter-skinned women often receive preferential treatment in professional, social, and romantic spaces. These advantages were not always named, but they shaped opportunity. Higher visibility in desirable roles led to higher pay in some industries. Social networks opened more easily. Support flowed with fewer barriers. The path to softness shortened for them because the world responded with fewer obstacles. Women who faced bias carried additional strain that pushed soft life further from reach. Networks created another layer of privilege. Some women inherited support systems that absorbed pressure. Their families shared childcare, provided housing during transitions, or offered financial help when needed. These networks protected time. They prevented crises from turning into collapse. They created buffers that made rest possible. Other women built adulthood without these supports. They stood alone when emergencies hit. They faced consequences with no one to call. Their lives demanded endurance, not softness. Inherited stability played a quiet but powerful role. Women who grew up without exposure to severe hardship learned that rest was normal. Their safety taught them to value ease. They entered adulthood with confidence that the basics would hold. Women raised in instability learned to stay alert. They carried the instinct to anticipate crisis. The shift toward softness required them to release habits that had protected them for years. Letting go felt dangerous. Letting go felt dangerous. The emotional cost became clear as the trend spread. Women who lacked structural privilege felt judged for struggling. Public discourse implied they were failing to claim ease. It implied their lives were hard because they accepted too much responsibility or refused to set boundaries. These messages ignored the fact that many women had no room to step back. Their families needed them. Their jobs demanded them. Their communities leaned on them. Their strength was treated as an endless resource. The system benefited from that strength. Workplaces relied on women who stayed late, filled gaps, and carried emotional labor. Families depended on women to manage crises without complaint. Partners leaned on women who supported them through every emotional turn. These expectations kept women in constant motion. Soft life encouraged withdrawal from these duties. The world around them encouraged the opposite. The conflict created internal tension that rarely found language. This documentary hits its turning point as the privilege line becomes fully visible. Women who access softness often lived in environments built to protect them. Women who could not access it lived in environments built to extract their labor. The movement asked both groups to adopt the same mindset. The outcomes were never going to be equal. At this stage of the narrative, the central question expands. It is no longer only about who gets to, but I don't see it all. It is about what rests on the backs of the women who cannot. Their exhaustion goes unseen because the world is accustomed to their endurance. Their struggle is dismissed because it is familiar. Soft Life attempted to offer an escape. It did not interrogate why escape was needed. It focused on individual action instead of structural change. It centered personal responsibility instead of shared accountability. This shift protected the systems that created the hardship in the first place. It allowed privilege to remain invisible to those who benefited from it. It placed the burden of transformation on women who already carried the heaviest loads. A deeper truth emerges. Soft life is not simply a lifestyle. It is a response to a world that demands constant productivity from women. It is an attempt to reclaim humanity in environments that reward exhaustion. The idea carries real value. The problem is not the desire for softness. The problem is the uneven access created by long-standing inequalities. As the chapter builds toward its close, the question of change takes center stage. What would softness look like if it did not depend on privilege? If society shifted workplace expectations, improved wages, expanded social support, reduced cost burdens, and redistributed care responsibilities, softness would move from aspiration to possibility. Women would not need to fight for rest. Rest would be built into the structure of life. The documentary steps back to examine the final consequence. When soft life is framed as a personal achievement, the pressure falls on women. When soft life is framed as a structural issue, the responsibility shifts to society. The distinction matters. Women have carried the burden of adaptation for generations. They have been told to be strong, flexible, patient, and enduring. Soft life created a new message. It told them to be gentle, slow, and selective. Both messages demanded internal change. Neither addressed the external forces that shaped their lives. The final beat lands on the weight behind that oversight. Some women benefit when others remain tired. Systems function more cheaply. Workplaces operate more smoothly. Households stay intact. Communities remain supported by unpaid labor. The privilege line is not accidental. It maintains itself through constant pressure. The chapter ends on the question that sits at the heart of the entire series. If softness can only exist for a select group, who benefits from keeping the rest of the women tired?